I appreciate you saying that, Kyle. I actually, and I think you probably know this, with most authors, I had no control over the actual look of the book. However, when it was in the production process, I just had to have faith that Chronicle, you know, which is a publisher known for their beautiful books, that they would do right by the book, and they certainly did. They really paid attention to the text and paid attention to the aesthetic that I was trying to evoke with the recipes and the text, which is a timeless kind of feeling. And there are aspects of the book that are very modern and aspects of it that are very old-fashioned all at once. And they really captured that. It's sort of a hard balance to strike, but design-wise, I think they did a beautiful job. And I couldn't be more pleased with it.
And as wonderful as it looks now in its brand new state, it's going to look so much better when it has some flour and a stain here and some.
Oh, absolutely! I think so. A little tomato sauce stain.
Exactly.
And you know, maybe some wear on the cover. It's just going to get better and better looking.
This is a book that was born in more than one way at Deep Springs. Tell me about Deep Springs.
Yes. Deep Springs is a unique place on Earth. It's a place very dear to my heart. It's a 2-year college they have a very, very rigorous academic program there. And the way that it works is you go there for your first 2 years of college, and then you transfer to a 4-year university. And it is situated on a real working cattle ranch in the eastern part of California, out in the high desert. And it's a very, very small student body. Only 12 to 13 are admitted each year, and so the whole student body is 24 to 26. And the last, you know, among many unique things about the place, it's all male, has been since it was founded in 1917, and just because of the logistics and the size of the place, they haven't managed to go co-ed, and many of us in the Deep Springs family wish that there were a similar place for women, a similar program for, you know, that women would have the opportunity to attend. But, you know, that's still in the future.
And it's where you, as a student, kind of became acquainted with cooking.
Yes, it is. I had the great fortune of going there as a student, and when you're there, you, of course, take these rigorous college-level courses, but you also do about 20 to 25 hours of physical labor on the ranch each week, and in any number of capacities. There are students that milk the cows, there are students that feed the animals, cook the meals, clean up after the meals, work on the computer networks. You know, there are a number of jobs, and you rotate through a number of different positions during your 2 years there. And my first job, among my first jobs, was student cook. And I'd cooked before, and I loved cooking and had a few dishes I did well at that point. But this was a real eye-opening experience for me. It was really hard, extremely challenging, a lot of pressure, but it was really fun and very gratifying when I succeeded. So that's where I first started, you know, really getting my feet wet with cooking. And then when I transferred to Cornell, I continued cooking for my job. I always needed to work all the way through college. And after Deep Springs, I always did cooking, worked in restaurants, did catering, that kind of thing. So that's how I got my start.
I'm talking with Tom Hudgens. He's the author of The Common Sense Kitchen, 500 recipes plus lessons for a handcrafted life. This is a cookbook that works especially well for novices, but also for experienced cooks.
That's exactly what I hope. In some ways, I wrote it for novices. However, I wrote it for ambitious novices. You know, the guys at Deep Springs, they'll come in and they've never cooked before, and they want to make a classic textbook creme brulee. You know, they don't want to start off with baked custard and, you know, go through the progression. No, they want to start with something kind of tricky and hard, and so that's just how they are. I always call them ambitious beginners, and so I wanted to account for their desires to make, you know, some really fancy stuff in addition to the nice, good old-fashioned comfort food stuff that we like to eat, you know, as well. So that's partly where the breadth of the book comes from, is this is the stuff that interested them and interested me when I was that age, too, and continues to.
Before you get to recipes in this book, there are definitions of essential implements that you would use and essential terms. If you don't know what braise or deglaze means, you will if you go through the first, 50 pages here.
Exactly. I thought that introductory content, I thought that was important to put that in. A lot of people already know some of that stuff, but since I refer to it in the recipes, I thought it was important to give my my rundown on why I think this is important. I like to think that it has almost everything you'd need, in terms of what you'd need all in one volume to just really get started in the kitchen and really get cooking and be able to come out of the experience making a few good meals from scratch for yourself and your family. That's kind of what it's all about.
There are many recipes in this book that begin with someone's name, Mama Nell's or Catherine's corn soup.
Yep. And Rita's macaroni and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
These are women, and mostly it's women that I've named recipes after. Some of them are my relatives. Mama Nell's Kentucky bourbon balls. That's my grandmother, and my mother has a couple of her recipes in there. Because that's where most of us get our recipes still. And I use these dishes even when I was a professional cook and caterer. I relied on these dishes, and so writing the cookbook, I couldn't leave them out. And I think it's really important to get a sense of the continuity that these recipes are traditional, and they go back a long way. And you could serve some of this stuff to your great grandmother, and she would instantly recognize it. I love that a recipe is kind of something old-fashioned, but it's also something right there in the present moment as well.
Why didn't you pick the word common sense?
Common sense was originally suggested by my mother.
And you should listen to your mother, yes.
So I like that she came up with that that first. The working title of the book was always The Deep Springs Cookbook. Not the working title, but the title of the earlier incarnations that I would give as a gift to the students at Deep Springs as they graduated. I would give them a small cookbook as a sort of parting gift. Here you go, guys. You're on your way to, starting off on your adult lives. Here's a cookbook, and it was greatly appreciated. That's kind of how this whole thing got started. And of course, that was always called the Deep Springs Cookbook. But when I was working this up to reach a wider audience, I knew that calling something the Deep Springs Cookbook really wouldn't mean much to most people. And so we thought and we thought and we thought and we thought about what could be a perfect new title for this book, and we finally settled on the Common Sense Kitchen.
If you want to know a good recipe for beef stew, this book has you covered.
Yep.
There are 9 kinds of beef stew in here.
Yep. All based on one recipe, but the technique is pretty much the same. And just some of the additions to the pot are what changes. There's a Mexican version, Mexican braised beef, that has some chili and some delicious sweet spices in it, and that variation offers ways to serve that or things to serve it with. And then there's a classic French version that you make with all red wine and mushrooms and bacon. And there's a number version. There's one that really bolsters up the vegetables, makes it into really healthy winter comfort food. And that's how I cook. I do a lot of variations on themes, and sometimes it's hard for me to cook the same recipe exactly the same way twice.
This is a impressive book by size, more than 550 pages of explanation and recipes. Did anything get left out?
Well, not really.
Good.
I was able to put in everything that I wanted. There were a few things at the end that I had to really critically look at, and there's a lot of recipes that resemble this one. So I did edit a little bit, but basically, no, I was able to put everything in, and they agreed with it. So it was a really happy experience for me as an author.
There's hummus, there's salsas, there's iced tea. It runs the gamut.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. What I like to think, and maybe someone will actually try to do this, but if you were to cook just out of this book, lunch and dinner every day for yourself and your family, you wouldn't get bored for a really long time, because there's enough there to keep you going with the variations and the suggestions. And if you have this particular vegetable, here's a couple of ways you can use it, that kind of thing. I designed it, I wrote it to be, you know, really versatile like that, and to address pretty much any situation that someone would find themselves in, any part of the country or any season of the year. You know, there'll be something in here that would hopefully spark your imagination and interest.
Help me out here with a term. I'm not sure I'm going to say this correctly. Red onion galette?
Galette, that's exactly it. It's a free-form pie, just baked on a baking sheet. You roll out the dough, big circle, put your filling in the middle. In this case, it's a savory cheese topped with some delicious sautéed red onions, and then you fold the crust over the filling and bake it like that. It's a free-form pie. It's absolutely delicious.
You make grits look easy.
I love grits.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah. And, you know, I've recently discovered really delicious grits that are being grown in the South right now with heirloom varieties of corn, the way grits used to taste 100 years ago. And there's Anson Mills, I believe they're in South Carolina, and there's a number of other mills in that part of the country that are reviving this wonderful Southern corn tradition, and I think that's great. But I love grits. Even the regular old refined kind you get here in California are pretty good.
you mentioned in the Common Sense Kitchen that people should appreciate their food before you know, ingesting it.
That's absolutely essential. And we're a big old country with lots of different religious beliefs, but I grew up praying before meals. And then for a long time I didn't, and now I do again in a way. And I think however you feel about a higher being or whatever, that appreciation of the food that's right there in front of you is really important, because no matter what, there's a whole bunch of people and that somehow produced that food. Even if it's something you grew yourself in your garden, where did you get the seeds, and how did you get it watered, and how did you get it fertilized? And, you know, maybe it was all you, but just to be thankful for yourself in that case. Or, you know, even at a restaurant, it's like you look down at your plate when you finally, the waiter brings it, and you think of all the people that had something to do with all that food on the plate, and it really kind of gets mind-boggling. And so I like to take a minute and think about all those people and have gratitude for them, and just have gratitude for this delicious food that is going to fuel our bodies. I think that's a really important moment, and I think it sets my body ready to receive it, and it makes it taste better, and it helps me, you know, slow down and enjoy it more. And we can all use a little of that, I think.
You know, when it was confirmed that this was my kind of cookbook, When I read these words under pumpkin pie, under the entry for pumpkin pie,
okay,
for a breakfast version of this pie,
oh, yeah.
And I said, okay, here's someone who thinks like I do.
I love pie for breakfast. That's one of my favorite things. The day after Thanksgiving, to go into the fridge and get out the pie, you know, if you keep it in the fridge, and just have a slice, eat it out of your hand. Oh, I love that. I really do love that. But I think that things like pies and that kind of thing, depending on how they're, you know, how much sugar there is and how much, can be perfect for breakfast. And also, pie used to be in, you know, my Southern relatives talk about big ranch breakfasts where pie was baked fresh and served every morning, along with things like fried chicken, you know, and I love that tradition.
Is it true that if someone asks you what your favorite food is, you say butter?
I do. I think that's getting right to the heart of the matter, you know?
And then just what you put around the butter.
Exactly.
What's the biggest, not mistake, but what's the biggest intimidation for a beginner, be they an ambitious beginner or a tentative beginner? What should a beginner at cooking look out for?
I think I would advise a beginner to look out for being overly ambitious with what they want to cook. That something very, very simple is great to start off with, and simple never means boring. It just means that it's simple. And you can learn as a cook, especially as a beginning cook, if you're paying attention, you can learn a lot from just a simple sautéed vegetable. You know, how it's cut and how it behaves in the pan, and you're tasting pieces of it to see if it's done. And, you know, now it's still a little crunchy. Oh, no, now it's better. Oh, it needs salt. That kind of thing. You can learn a lot that way. And so I advise people to just not be overly ambitious, because if they are, it sets them up to, you know, possibly to fail, not necessarily, but and then they might get discouraged. So I just say, you know, start off easy, start with what you know, start off, and then as you build confidence and as you gain knowledge, it will just come naturally what you want to do, and you can get more and more ambitious. And then you can, you know, once you've mastered a few of the basics, you can spend a whole afternoon making, you know, fresh pasta noodles or fresh ravioli or some, you know, big project like that, and that can be great fun. And but I find that there is a progression that beginning cooks really should go through. They should start off with some of the simple stuff and get some confidence and some skills there, and then go on to the more complicated stuff.
Now, at the end of any good meal, there are dirty dishes, and at the end of this cookbook, there are dirty dishes.
That's it.
Page 568, you tell us how to wash dishes.
Yeah, that's, you know, some people might think that's unusual, but I didn't want to leave that out because everyone else leaves that out, and that's part of it. You know, whether you like it or not, that's part of it, and that's part of the whole craft of cooking and part of eating at home. And so I just thought that it would be useful, and some people might enjoy or might, you know, learn a little from just, you know, my little rundown on how I wash dishes. And it's a, you know, comes from being a professional cook and all that, having to supervise the dishwashers at Deep Springs for years. I just thought that was part of it, and it wouldn't be complete without it. So that's in there too. And then following that is one of my favorite recipes in the book. It's for homemade soap that is made at Deep Springs from time to time. It's not like Deep Springs can't afford their own soap, but being a cattle ranch, you know, there's a lot of beef tallow to use up. And so I devised a recipe, found this great little book, and started this recipe with a soap that has made from beef tallow and olive oil, and it's really lovely stuff. And so the students love making that. That's the very last recipe in the book.
And finally, this is a perfect companion to someone who is interested in the slow food movement.
Yes, absolutely. Cooking, the kind of cooking that I like to do, sometimes it's quick and easy, but sometimes it's not, you know, and I don't think that one of the messages that I try to send out to people is that cooking isn't necessarily work to be avoided. We get told that a lot. We get told, oh, you don't have time to cook. Cooking is too hard. It's too messy. It's too much trouble, you know, but I like to look at it as a really vital craft, as part of what makes us human. It's incredibly fulfilling, and it's one of the best and most direct ways to nurture people. And so that's the message I'm trying to send out, is that we do have the time to do this, and it is worthwhile. And it's really, really fulfilling. So I think that some of us have forgotten that, and I'm trying to get back to that.
The name of the book is The Common Sense Kitchen, 500 Recipes Plus Lessons for a Handcrafted Life. Tom, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Kyle. It's been great. Thank you.